engaging presentations on the most urgent problem of our day and what you can do about it.
Now, the End Abortion Podcast by Priests for Life.
I first met Father Frank in 2014. I don't know if he remembers so well, but it was actually my first activist event in the pro-life movement. I was pro-life, but kind of secretly, and I was only out a little bit because my friend Monica, who's an atheist, she's a Lester, you might have heard her then. She just had a baby, otherwise she would have been here. But she is an atheist, and when I saw her being all pro-life and atheist, I was like, yeah, that sounds like me. Maybe I should be doing the pro-life thing. And so I went to hear her speak at the Walk for Life in 2014. And guess who did her introduction? Father Frank. And Father Frank gave her the most generous introduction. You know, a priest introducing an atheist? I was like, whoa, is this what the pro-life movement is about? This is so cool. So Monica gave this incredible speech, and then later that night, her dad asked Father Frank if he'd like to come have dinner with us. I don't know if you've ever been to the Walk for Life. There's like 80,000 people there or something, and San Francisco's a big city, so we didn't really expect Father Frank to show up, but he did. He came and had dinner with at least three atheists that he just met. And like, come on, you guys. Like, it's so obvious, like, the conflict that people would see between me and Father Frank. You know, he's a hardcore Republican, he loves Trump, I know, and I'm an atheist. And yet, we've been able to forge a partnership together that has been extremely valuable to me as an activist. Not just because of the people he can introduce me to, but because of his experience, and because we both have the same desire to build unity and to overcome these obstacles in order to make real change. And Father Frank has always made that a priority, and he has never made me feel like an outsider. And so I want to do the same for him. I want him and everyone who loves Father Frank to know that you are welcome here. This conference is for you too. And you, all of us, have a lot to learn from Father Frank, who is literally the most busiest, the most important, the most famous, and the very best pro-life Catholic in the entire pro-life movement. Please welcome to the stage my very good friend and your new mentor, Father Frank Capone.
Well, thank you, Teresa, and thank you all. You know, I got her invitation to come here, and I said I will gladly fly clear across the country from our headquarters there in just outside Orlando, Florida, to come and speak at this conference. This is so important. Each of you and what you do are so important, and it has been a tremendous day. I've heard just about each and every talk that has been given, and I want you to know, of course, so many of you, including so many of the groups that have their exhibit tables here today, have been friends and collaborators for many, many years, and I want to salute all of you and thank you. I want to bring you the greetings, before I get into my message, of our entire team at Priests for Life. We are actually a family of different groups connected together in one ministry. And so and Priests for Life, if you don't follow and know our work, though many of you do, is not just for priests, not just for Catholics, it's for anyone and everyone who wants to bring an end to the killing of children in the womb. And we have multiple groups, for example, Alveda King, many of you see her all the time on TV and at different events. She works for us full time, proclaiming that the civil rights movement of today is the pro-life movement. She said that to me when she and I first started working together. That was back in 1999. And we met each other, started working together. She came on board with us full time a few years later. And we were walking together in the March for Life in Washington, D.C. And I turned to her and I said, does this remind you of the marches with your uncle and your dad, or Uncle Martin Luther King Jr. and your dad in the Civil Rights Movement? And she turns to me and says, Father Frank, this is the civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. And so she knows I'm here today, sends you her greetings and her encouragement as well. Janet Miranda, our executive director, co-founded Silent No More. I'm going to say a word about that. And she has one of the books that we've had on our table back there, Recall Abortion, giving voice to those who have had this terrible experience, as some of our speakers today have had. And we all know people who have had the terrible experience of aborting their child. She helps us to proclaim that we who reject abortion do not reject those who have abortions, but rather we embrace them with love and peace. I'm privileged to be the pastoral director for the worldwide ministry of Rachel's Vineyard. Rachel's Vineyard is represented here today as well. This ministry was founded by Dr. Teresa and Kevin Burke. They are full-time associates of Priest for Life. Rachel's Vineyard teamed up under the umbrella of Priest for Life back in 2003. It was founded in the mid-90s. But this is the world's largest ministry for healing the wounds of abortion, not just the moms and the dads, but the entire family and everyone who's affected by it. And so Teresa and Kevin Burke, they send you their greetings and encouragement here today. Brian Kemper, who spoke earlier today, works with us full-time, heading up not only our youth outreach, but so much of the other work we do, speaking and organizing and protests and social media work. And Brian, thank you for being here and for doing the work that you do. And then all the others on our team, we really want you to know, when we come to events like this, it's not just for the event. It's for establishing and deepening our ongoing collaboration and commitment to come to that day of victory. What I want to talk to you about is some of the things we do in this movement that the supporters of abortion hate the most. And that should encourage us, because when you look at what they hate the most, then you know what is the most effective thing for you to be doing. Our goal, I love that, I've been looking at this all day. The future of California is pro-life. And this is such an important message for this statewide conference, because when we talk about abortion, first of all, we're not just talking about limiting abortion or speaking against abortion or reducing the numbers of abortion. Our goal is one simple thing. It is to end abortion. And when we talk about ending abortion, there is no state, there is no area of the country, there is no square mile in this country, there is no square foot of land in this country that is not supposed to be pro-life. We don't let anyone off the hook. You can't let anyone off the hook. You can't have a country that is half pro-life and half pro-choice, where some states pro-life and some states pro-choice. You can't have that, because the choice we're facing is not if pro-life wins or pro-choice wins. That's not the question that this movement is trying to resolve. The fact of the matter is, unless pro-life wins, nobody wins. There is no such thing. There is no such thing as victory for pro-choice. There's no such thing as that, because the choice is death. And so either pro-life wins or nobody wins. So we don't write off California. We don't write off New York, which is where I was born and raised. We don't write off any place. This civil right, this human right, this foundational right is at the basis of everything. And it deserves every ounce of every effort that all of us make for our entire lives. It deserves us to sacrifice our lives, sacrifice our possessions and our reputation and everything else. And if all the efforts of all the groups represented here and all the other organizations in this movement over all the years and decades that they have been laboring to bring an end to abortion, if all this energy and all these resources and all these efforts and all these sacrifices ended up resulting in the saving of one single human life, they would be more than worth it. All those efforts we're only directed to the saving of one human life, and even if that ever failed, it would be more than worth it. We have to understand what we are working for here cannot even be described in its importance, its fundamental importance for everything else. Now, I firmly believe in what's been articulated here today. I articulated myself. The interrelationship between all these issues, every social issue, every human rights issue, is deeply interrelated, deeply interconnected, and we have to be paying attention to and making progress on them all. But brothers and sisters, are we ever going to have a society that learns not to kill the guilty by capital punishment if they haven't learned to stop killing the innocent? Are we ever going to have a society where children stop killing children with guns when that same society has parents killing children? Are we ever going to have a society that welcomes immigrants across the borders of this nation if we can't even welcome a child across the border of the womb? And can we ever maintain peace between nations when we can't maintain peace between a mother and her own child? It will not work. We will be building on quicksand. And when we point this out, the abortion supporters go crazy. Do you know that there are a whole list of abortion supporters in Congress right now who actually wrote a letter to Pope Francis when he came to visit the United States? Pro-abortion members of Congress who said to the Pope, "We stand with you in your advocacy for the most vulnerable human beings." And I publicly addressed them and I said, "No, you don't. Don't try to start putting yourself under the mantle of the Pope when you are advocating for the killing of children. You do not stand with the most vulnerable in our society. You stand against them." Brothers and sisters, we will not make progress unless we fix first things first. The future of California is pro-life. The future of New York is pro-life. The future of the United States of America is pro-life, or else there's no future at all. It's as simple as that. You know what they hate that we do as well? They hate when we actually talk about abortion. I want you to think about something for a moment. The last thing that abortion supporters want to talk about is abortion. Think about it. If an abortion supporter gets up and gives a talk about women's rights and women's health and women's equality and freedom and choice and the Constitution, I have no objection to any of that. I want to hear them talk about abortion, but they won't. Take any speech of any politician who's in favor of the quote-unquote right to choose. Take any speech of any professor who's in favor of legal abortion. Read through it, do a word search on it, analyze it from beginning to end, and tell me where in that speech they describe or define abortion. They don't. They never do. I'll tell you who will describe abortion. Those who actually do it with their own hands. But that's a different group. Those who will be called into the courtroom for trials like that of our friend David and others. Oh yes, well, this is their word. They'll describe what it is. Read Warren Hearn's textbook, Abortion Practice, and you will read in that book words like decapitate and dismember. You will see words like blood and skull and limbs and feet and arms and legs. You'll see those words in that book. But you won't hear any of those words. If you ever hear a pro-choice politician
use any of those words I just mentioned, please let me know, because it'll be history making. They don't. They won't. They can't. In fact, dismemberment abortion and the various laws that have been passed and bills that have been introduced in various states and in the federal Congress to protect children from dismemberment abortion, and this is one of the most important next steps when it comes to pro-life legislation. The first such law to be passed a few years ago was in the state of Kansas. I stood with then-Governor Sam Brownback as he signed that bill into law. And he told me, you know, Father, here in our state, the senators in our legislature who opposed this bill got up and spoke against it, and in speaking against it, they couldn't even say the name of the bill. Think about this for a moment. You're standing up debating a bill and you don't even mention the name. Planned Parenthood of Kansas and Mid-Missouri, when they sent out their press release opposing the bill, didn't even name the bill in their press release. Here they're sending out a press release about the bill and they don't even say the name of it. Why? Because in the name of the bill was the word that they don't want to use, that they will never use, if you will see it in the abortion textbook, the word dismember. They couldn't say it, they couldn't write it, they don't want people to hear it, they don't want us talking about it, they don't want us thinking about it, and they don't want our fellow citizens thinking about it. Brothers and sisters, this tells us where we need to go. In our discussions with people, in our work on social media, in our talks, in our debates, in our presentations, start at the beginning. Somebody thinks they have an opinion on abortion? Well, one of the most frequent questions I ask them is, well, have you ever seen one? Or have you ever heard a description of one? Well, here, you can either go to the medical textbooks or you can go to the testimony that abortionists have given in court, like this one, for example, by Dr. Harlan Raymond Giles, an abortionist. He was asked, can the heart of a fetus or embryo still be beating during a suction curettage abortion as the fetus or embryo comes down the cannula? Suction curettage. Now, we're not even talking about the dismemberment abortion. We're talking about the abortions in the first trimester. 90% of the abortions. Can the heart still be beating as that little child goes down through the suction tube? And his answer was, listen, for a few seconds to a minute, yes. Now, you tell me how many people you've talked about abortion with have ever heard that. The Supreme Court, quote, the friction causes the fetus to tear apart. For example, a leg might be ripped off the fetus as it is pulled through the cervix. What word in that sentence will abortion supporters never use? Leg. Leg. Human being, person, humanity, violence, a leg being ripped off. Brothers and sisters, this isn't difficult. You're going to take a course. What's the first thing the professor of the course does on the first day of class? Define the terms. I'm going to take a course on trigonometry. You can be sure that first class isn't going to go by until that word is defined. What is trigonometry? What is fill in the blank, any productive conversation about anything, you're going to start with what it is. They hate us for doing that. They will try to stop us from doing that. They will tell us they don't need to hear us doing that. They certainly will tell us they don't need to see abortion, but the fact of the matter is they do, and we won't. Because as I'm often quoted as saying, America will not reject abortion until America sees abortion. Brothers and sisters, the further point here of what they hate us doing is pointing out their extremism. They want the debate to be about, like we saw earlier when Catherine Glenn Foster was speaking, the Alabama law. They want the public debate to be about abortion in the earliest stages. They want the public debate to be about abortion in cases of rape and incest and life of the mother, Here's where they don't want it to be: on dismemberment, on abortion in the 7th, 8th, and 9th month of pregnancy, and on the killing of babies who survive abortion. Point out their extremism, and they are at their weakest point. They try to do it to us, we need to do it to them. They're going to ask you, oh, even if the woman is raped. Of course, we have very clear and strong answers for that. The abortion never helps the rape victim. It's an additional trauma. But the point is, that's the ground that they want to argue on, and where they know that they have the most public support. We have to do exactly the opposite. In a few days, I'll be going to D.C., and we'll be having a public event, a lobbying day, and a hearing on the bill to protect children in abortion facilities that survive the abortion. They're left to die, or they're actively killed, and they don't have adequate protection right now. The other side does not want us talking about this. They kill these children in these abortion facilities even after they're born alive. And it is the abortion supporters in Congress and in everywhere else, even though this bill would not, under any circumstance, limit or prohibit any abortion, they oppose it vigorously. And I want to ask you a simple question. Why? Why would abortion supporters oppose a bill that has absolutely nothing to do with abortion, but that simply calls for the protection of this child when the child is outside the womb, completely separate from the mother's body? Have you ever wrestled with that question? Why is it? What is it about the abortion support? Listen, you have all you want with abortion. And this law doesn't change that one iota. Has nothing to say about the child in the womb. It has everything to say about the child outside the womb. Why would they oppose it anyway? What benefit is it to the abortion supporters that these children are killed now outside the womb? Well, I'll tell you, it's because it's really very simple to understand. In fact, the pro-abortion, quote, ethicist Peter Singer explained it. And he said, to be consistent, there are only two possible positions to take. A, oppose abortion, or B, endorse infanticide. He says the reason that these are the only two logically consistent positions that people can take is that the event of birth, the journey of the child through the birth canal and out of the womb, cannot possibly be so morally significant an event as to make the difference between who is a person and who is not. It can't be. It's simply a journey of a very short distance. You see the point? Unless the abortion lobby, unless they say that that child can in fact be killed outside the womb because the mother chose an abortion, unless they say that, their whole position collapses. Because as soon as you say even the child designated for abortion is to be protected if that child comes out of the womb, then you are denying their key premise that choice is more important than life. And then you are raising the question, well, then if we can protect the child as soon as he or she emerges from the womb, well, how is that child different from 1 minute before, or 1 hour before, or 1 week before, or 1 month before? It all unravels. Their position has nothing to do with the birth canal or the womb. It has to do with the idea that choice is more important than life. And brothers and sisters, this is why we see them protesting these born alive bills. As Peter Singer, only two consistent positions, either oppose abortion or endorse infanticide. And this is where we need to challenge our nation right now. And a final thing that the other side hates when we do is to show that abortion is way more about way more than a mother's choice about the child in her womb, even if they admit that it's a child. Is it about the mother choosing to kill the child, and those are the only two people, even if they admit what it does to the child, are those the only two people impacted by this, quote, choice? You know what they hate us doing? They hate us doing what we do in the Silent No More campaign and in the initiative that we call the Shockwaves of Abortion. What is the impact, not only on the mom, throughout the rest of her life? And we minister to them at Rachel's Vineyard, and I've ministered to people, my friends, who have had 25 abortions. And they're out there because one abortion leads to another. It's a cycle of spiraling despair and self-destruction. But what does it do to the dad? And what does it do, furthermore, to the grandparents? Janet Moreno, whom I told you co-founded Silent No More, together with Georgia Forney of Anglicans for Life, she's the grandmother of two aborted children. What does it do to the grandparents? Some of them tried to save their grandchild and they couldn't. Others of whom are guilty of participating in and maybe forcing the abortion. They grieve too. What about the aunts and uncles? They've lost nieces and nephews. What about the siblings? What impact does it have on a child to know that mom killed my sister or dad arranged for the killing of my brother? So how are they my mom and dad anymore? What's that relationship even mean? They don't know. Neither do we. You see what it does? The shockwaves of abortion. What does it do to a child to realize at some point in his or her young life that his or her life wasn't even protected during those 9 months of the war? My life wasn't protected under the law. I don't know what that feels like, because being born before Roe v. Wade, my life was protected when I was in the womb. This is regardless of whether my mother or anyone's mother would have even considered abortion. It's a question of, it's a powerful statement about how much you were worth. Does the law protect me? Did the law protect me? And so that's why we see, and it's represented here, and it's represented in every pro-life event, the deep commitment of younger people to this movement is because it's more personal. You who were in the womb at a time that you did not have legal protection, you're not just speaking up for the babies that are in the womb now, you're speaking up for yourselves. And you know it. You're saying, I was a person then. I should have been protected then. And so must these children be protected now. The shockwaves of abortion. Friends, I want you to check that out. Connect with us. Silent No More. I'm going to give you a couple of websites that pertain to what I was just saying. SilentNoMore.com. You'll see the whole Silent No More campaign. AbortionShockwaves.com. Abortion Shockwaves. You'll read about not only the studies, but also the testimonies and the healing resources available to all these different family members and friends, too. If a friend takes a friend to have an abortion, you don't think that friend is going to grieve all his or her life the same way that mom and dad are going to grieve? They will, and they need healing too. And that abortionist and their staff, we do a tremendous amount of work healing and helping them. One of the first pro-life leaders that Abby Johnson came to was me. She already knew me from when she was working inside the abortion facility. It was one of the scenes of one of the elements of her story that's not in the Unplanned movie is the fact that she was watching my abortion programs on EWTN while she was working in the facility. And one day when I was praying outside of her facility with 40 Days for Life, she looks out the window and she saw me. And she told her colleagues, oh, I know that priest, that's Father Frank. Do you think I could go out and meet him? And they said, what, are you crazy? You're not going to do that. But we met. We met all right when she was ready to seek the healing. And she will tell you, and all of these people who have left the abortion industry will tell you, priority number one is not movies, cameras, spotlights, banquets, applause, and cheers, and microphones. It's healing. It's the need for deep, lifelong healing from very deep wounds. And we need to pray that these people find that healing and that we accompany them on that journey. The abortion industry hates us even talking about this, because to talk about healing is an admission that there's something bad and wrong and harmful about the very product that they are selling. So, abortion shockwaves, Silent No More. And then as far as looking at abortion and reading the descriptions, lookatabortion.org is a resource we want you to know about. Lookatabortion.org. Challenge those who think they support this, but don't have the courage to look at it. It's like, if you don't have the courage to look at it, maybe you shouldn't be tolerating it. Connect with us on social media. By the way, on the table back there, we have some cards. Pro-Life Social Media is another website we have. You'll see all the links that follow me on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook Live. We're Facebook Live broadcasting this right now, and it's on video, and it's on Periscope, and it's on YouTube, and it's on a bunch of other things whose names I never even heard of. But our team is multi-streaming this, and we do that every day. We do that every day. We have material on the table in regard to the elections, which are so important, obviously, and lots of other things as well. Let me leave you with this story of a lawmaker who was bringing his daughter through the Holocaust Memorial in Washington. And she was relatively young. He wasn't sure how she would react as they walked through all the pictures, the descriptions of this atrocity of the Holocaust. But as they did so, she didn't say a word. And she was just squeezing his hand more and more tightly as they walked through that museum. And finally, at the end, there's a book that you can sign. Leave your name that you were a visitor and leave a comment if you wish. He leaned over her shoulder, and when he saw the comment that she wrote, he knew he had done the right thing by bringing her there. And the comment was simply this. Why didn't somebody do something? Now, I want to tell you right now, it's going to be true here in California and throughout this nation, that the day will come that people will look back on this time in our history, and abortion by then will just be a bad memory, and they'll wonder how it was permitted. But when they look back at these times, during these years, to this day, they will not say, why didn't somebody do something? They will look at you, they will read about you, they will hear about us, and they will say, thank God somebody did something. Keep doing it. Thank you for having me, and let's go forward to victory.
This has been the End Abortion Podcast. To learn more, to help end abortion, and to connect with us on social media, visit endabortion.net.